All right, good to be with you on a Memorial Day Monday. Appreciate you. A lot of people weighing in that are up with us this morning. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We got a ton to get to on the show today still. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the text page and check in with us. Excited about the Astros this morning for sure. We just talked about Christian Walker's walk-off home run. We have we've not mentioned Colton Gordon did what we've asked these young pitchers to do each time out, Seth. You know, we're trying not to get too greedy with it. Give us the five and yeah. a change innings, yeah. and don't let the game unravel on the team. And he kept the Mariners in the windshield. You know what I mean? Like you could still see him and gave him an opportunity to win that game. Put him in a position where you get a big Cam Smith double, another rookie, getting a big double late in the game to tie it, and then it gives you an opportunity in the ninth inning to win it with Christian Walker yesterday.
Yeah, and then and Dubin coming in for 1 2/3
innings.
He's
been awesome. That's your guy, man. That's your New York guy right there.
He's from, near Brandy's hometown.
Yeah.
He was a guy. He's like so many guys on this Astros team, a guy that was lightly regarded when he was in high school or a young man in the Dominican Republic somewhere. That he just kind of kept getting better, similar to Gusto. I think like Gusto wasn't highly regarded, but he kept playing baseball.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden they pop up on one of the best teams from this past decade.
It's funny. I was on Seattle radio on Friday afternoon. I was on Mark James's show up there in Seattle, and he said how have the Astros kind of kept this thing going for so long? Like, what's the biggest thing that they've done? It's different than everybody else when it comes to just keeping this window open. Because it's not, we get it that they're not what they were at their peak, but this is still a playoff contender. It's still a team. I think it's still a team that by the end of the year, you don't want to play in a short series if Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown are both healthy. You know, that's two guys who can easily go win three or four games for you in a seven game series. And I told them about the Jeff Luno Latin America sensation, you know, that whole phenomenon of going down there. Finding guys who are like 19 years old, which if you do the conversion chart is like being 62 in America.
Yeah.
And Mark was simultaneously mesmerized and angered by the whole thing. Like, how did the Astros, like, you know, it was one of those things. Yeah. Like, now everybody's probably doing it, you know?
No, yeah, well, the same with Luno and aggressively signing Cuban players when a lot of major league teams were just kind of dicey on exactly how to scout guys and how to project them, because the way the Cuban Baseball League works is so much different than Major League Baseball, that they were very aggressive and we became Havana West, you know, because they just did a better job of finding untapped resources.
Yep.
But you're exactly right. Yeah. Those competitive advantages never last long because teams catch on to it.
Yep.
And, you know, NBA all of a sudden like, whoa, hey, these Eastern Europeans can actually play some basketball. Yeah. You know, you're not going to be the only team that has the Eastern Europeans locked down forever.
Yep. Yeah, so Colton Gordon yesterday gives you five innings, seven hits, three earned runs, didn't walk anybody, and four strikeouts. And, man, it was so frustrating early in the game. Everything was with two outs. You know, he in the first inning, he had two outs, and I think it was Garver he had down 0-2. He had two guys on base, but if you can get a punch out pitch here and get out of the inning, and he gives up a double to left center, you know, and then in the second or third inning, gives up another run again with two outs. Like, man, I'm watching, especially in that first inning, I'm like, that's one of the big differences between these guys that come up from the minor leagues and the guys who've been doing it for 8 years is they've got a finishing move here, you know? Yeah. And Colton Gordon didn't have a finishing move. He just throws a meatball up there on 0-2. Like, bury one in the dirt and make him chase it on 0-2. But I'm all leading up to giving credit. I will sign up for five innings blindly. Five innings and three earned runs with these Sugarland guys they're bringing up every time. I will sign up for that every single time.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And it's, look, one of the big differences in the game yesterday was the Mariners kind of fell apart in the field in the late innings. Yeah. They just a lot of just errant throws or bobbled balls and what have you. And like that, those little things on the margins where the Astros have gotten really good with the fielding, those are the kinds of things that you have to be the ultimately scrappy team.
Yep.
Until you get peak Yordan back, especially, and unless Christian Walker starts hitting like he belongs as a cleanup hitter, like those things have to sustain you, and then hopefully that offense is out there. Obviously, we've seen it in the last few weeks.
Yep.
They just got to keep rolling with that.
Yeah, Ocho's asking on the text page, Sean, can you explain to me why Josh Hader wasn't available given their off day today? Because he would have pitched 3 days in a row. They just I think that's just one of those like rules they have. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just
they
a non-starter.
Right, and they put him out on Friday maybe just because he hadn't gone in a couple of days. They want to keep him sharp.
Yeah.
And Abreu did a good job on Saturday because Abreu got worked by Rodriguez on Friday.
Yeah.
Gets out there in a similar situation on Saturday and ends up throwing the first couple of sinkers he's thrown all season long. So he was digging into just exactly that situation with that batter in that moment.
Yeah, their bullpen as a whole, like again, it's with this bullpen, it's probably the rule with any of the pitchers, but you expect more out of guys like Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown. But as far as the guys now that they're piecing this thing together with, and I would throw Lance McCullers for now into this category as well. I mean, Lance hasn't thrown five innings yet since his comeback started. So getting five innings out of Lance, that would unto itself be a benchmark. And I'm assuming if he made it five innings, it would mean that he pitched fairly well. But especially with the way the bullpen's pitching right now, if you can get five innings, three runs out of these guys, the bullpen's not giving up anything. Like, I'm looking at the guys yesterday, like Sean Dubin and Caleb Ort were guys that you're not really counting on heavily coming into the season. Dubin hasn't given up a run yet, and Ort has a 2.08 ERA, and Brian King comes in and finishes it off, and Brian King has sort of become what Taylor Scott was last year, but a lefty version of it, and I think a better version of it. Taylor Scott, you always felt like they're, you know, like that the barrels were lurking around the corner with him, that his numbers were a little phony, and here we are a year later, and he got DFA'd. But he's sort of become that unexpected seventh-inning guy. Now, he was a ninth-inning guy yesterday because Hader was unavailable and Abreu was unavailable. But King has turned into sort of that nice third complement to Abreu and Hader at the back end of that bullpen. This bullpen is nice right now, man.
Yeah, right now they've got the second lowest. The bullpen has the second lowest ERA in baseball after the San Francisco Giants. So obviously best in the AL. And it's not just the small ERA. They've had to do it for extended stretches.
Yep.
A lot of these have felt more like piggyback starts than anything else. And that's just, you shouldn't expect more than that at this point. Other than Lance, if you go to Lance, okay, in his last eight innings, he's allowed two earned runs.
Yeah.
So that's very, very good.
That's progress.
That's with a lot of traffic and maybe the expected ERA would be a little bit higher. He's got to get more efficient, but he's just never been a really efficient pitcher to begin with.
Yeah.
But like as long as he can keep making this steady progress from start to start, it's exciting. But I don't think even he knows exactly what he is as a pitcher right now.
No.
He's got to feel it all out.
No, but I think your point is valid about the improvement. Like that, I do feel like, okay, with him, I don't feel like there's another doesn't get out of the first inning because he's getting shellacked start, especially with some of the teams they've got coming up on the schedule here. There's no killers on there. So yeah, I'm optimistic about Lance. But right now, like in terms of just expectations right now, like the only pitchers I have expectations that they're going to get beyond the fifth inning right now are the two aces, are Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. And I think coming into the season, I would have said, well, Eric Geddy's a guy who can get that for you. He did it multiple times last year. Rennell Blanco has been that guy. Hayden Wisniewski can be that guy for you. And you're missing all three of those guys right now. So, and yet 10-7 in that 17-game stretch without a day off. So they get a day off today.
Cam Smith, the Friday night Jose Altuve throw to home was so there are two plays in that game. One, Cam Smith missed the relay on a throw home.
Yep.
So that was him showing his youth. But then later on, Altuve catches a fly ball in left field, and the third base coach says, oh, Altuve, weak arm, sends Raleigh, not a fast guy
at
all.
He's like one of the slowest guys in baseball, yeah.
Yeah. Altuve, you know, made a good throw home. It was a one bouncer to Yiner. And yet I was more insulted than I was jubilant.
Yes, it was disrespectful.
Yeah, it was disrespectful. It was very disrespectful.
To Jose Altuve.
They were almost like, it's one thing to, you know, just force the issue, but I feel like there's almost no other left fielder that they would have sent him home on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like he's, yeah, I can't think of one. Text message, Paredes makes me not miss Bregman. Okay. Now let's talk about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about this. Did the Astros dodge a bullet this offseason? We know that.
Wait a second now, because if you're going to bring up Alex Bregman's injury, when has Alex ever been injured before? Oh, yeah, every single time he slumps, it's always rooted in some injury.
Yeah.
There's always an explanation for it.
Well, and he's not slumping this year. That's what hurts the Red Sox really bad. He's having an MVP caliber season. If you missed it this weekend, Alex Bregman suffered a quad injury that Alex Cora, well, Bregman himself called. We'll hear from Bregman right here. Bregman himself called it similar to the quad injury that he suffered in 2021, where he missed 2.5 months of the 2021 season from June to August. Here's Alex Bregman after suffering a quad injury this weekend.
Pretty severe right quad strain, and pretty similar to 21.
Did it surprise you? Because yesterday you thought it wasn't that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Surprised me a lot, but it is what it is, and now try and take it day by day and crush rehab.
All right, so that was Bregman, got to go crush rehab. He went on to talk for about another 2 minutes, and apparently he was hopeful when he first strained it wasn't too bad, and then he had trouble sleeping that night. He woke up the next day and it's like, oh, okay, seen this movie before.
Probably all black, and his old leg was black after that.
So back in 2021, just for some context here, back in 2021, Bregman went out with the quad injury on June 16th, didn't come back till August 25th. I think what's notable about that, Seth, is that when he got injured, he had an OPS of 787. He finished the season that year with an OPS of 777. So he didn't come back and have one of his classic Bregman Septembers, you know, late season. I remember that one pretty vividly. That was the year they went on to play the Braves in the World Series. And if I recall, Bregman was not good in the postseason that year. So we'll see. I mean, the Red Sox are paying him $40 million a year. I think, you know, the big thing, too, is if he's missing a couple months with a quad injury, does he opt out of his deal at the end of the year? That had been all the talk the first month of the season was, well, he's opting out. He's leading all third basemen in home runs. He's got an OPS.
He's going to be a free agent again.
Yeah. He's got a three-year deal where he can opt out after each season if he wants to. If he misses 2 years, I'm guessing he's opting back in for another $40 million next year.
Yeah. You know? This is where it was a really well-negotiated contract by Bregman and his agent.
Yes.
He controls everything. This is exactly what that contract is good for. If you get an injury like this, it's guaranteed. I'm a Red Sox for life. Yes. Going to get a Red Sox tattoo and everything.
A couple of things. One, if he were to opt out after this season, there's at least one article I saw that listed the Astros as one of the potential suitors. I don't know that Bregman would come back here. I don't know that the Astros would be willing to pay up and give the length of a deal Bregman might be seeking if he's opting out. I forgot where I was going with this. Bregman and the opt out.
Something about Paredes.
Well, let's talk about Paredes. I don't think it was, but I think that's worth. Oh, I know where we were going. It does involve Paredes to a degree. Do you feel like the Astros dodged a bullet? They did make an offer to him even after they'd made the Paredes trade that was reported
to Bregman.
Six years, $156 million. Do you feel like, with no opt-outs or anything like that, do you feel like if Bregman had said yes to that, what would we be saying if he strained a quad as an Astro and they just signed that deal?
I would, oh boy. Oh, it would suck. We just went over all the guys that the Astros are paying right now who are injured.
Yeah.
And it was very painful, especially when it would feel, the criticism would end up being that, okay, Crane got overly sentimental, but I was at the time, once they were still in on Bregman after they had already gotten Paredes, I felt like, no, dude, no, the door is closed.
Me too.
Like, Bregman had a chance to re-sign here. That's it. You got to move on. You can't keep. So I wouldn't have been hypocritical. I would have said, yeah, you got too far out of your over your skis because of sentimentality.
I know. I would have.
Especially, it really helps that Paredes has been playing the way he's playing.
Paredes has been great. Now, I'll say this, and you know, I get overly into things like making the All-Star team and awards and things like that. I like stuff like that. With Bregman going out, Paredes has a hell of a shot if he keeps playing like this to make the All-Star team. He was an All-Star last year. He's got a chance to make it again this year. I mean, the Astros are starting to get a few guys that at least you can have conversations about like that. Paredes has been great. Hit a few more home runs over the weekend.
It's got
What's his May looking like?
I'm not looking on the season. He's fourth in OPS in all of Major League Baseball. Let me check the AL. So he's
really,
yeah.
Are you sure?
Third in OPS amongst in the AL behind Bregman and Ramirez.
Among third basemen.
Among third basemen.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Behind Ramirez. Yeah, like he's got a shot, man. And he's playing a good third
base. And that's
base.
With him coming on as his numbers are ascending at this point. Bregman obviously is going to be left in the dust.
Yes. Yeah.
Bregman's- well, I mean, his OPS will remain the same, but he won't qualify.
Right. So that's, man. So Paredes, that part of the trade, Cam Smith. Okay, so if Hayden Wisniewski goes out with Tommy John surgery, but Cam Smith has the solid rookie year and Paredes is an all-star, then the Kyle Tucker trade is a success, right? Like, you don't have to get all three of those guys to have
Cam
that
Smith, trade. Yeah, no, and Cam Smith in the month of May has been an above-average baseball player.
Yeah.
And you've got 6 years of control with him.
Yes.
So, and defensively, he's making great strides. I mean, we talked earlier, he still makes some guy who's never played the position before mistakes, like missing the cutoff man on Friday. But, man, he makes so many plus plays in the outfield.
Yeah.
And he's obviously got the right attitude for everything. He just looks like a baseball player.
Yeah.
If Paredes keeps playing like this, then I'll feel really good about that trade.
I will, too. I will, too. And Kyle Tucker's kind of he's backslid a little bit. I mean, he's still in the MVP conversation over there because the Cubs are doing really well, and his overall numbers are still good. He's cooled off since the tear that he started off on to begin the year. That just wasn't sustainable. He was red hot at the beginning of the year. But, yeah, man, if Paredes is in the All-Star conversation – and if Cam Smith at the end of the year is in the Rookie of the Year conversation, I mean, Hayden Wisniewski could retire and go open up a lemonade stand or a trinket stand on the side of the road somewhere, and that trade is a success. If you get two guys, and Paredes, you still got under team control for a couple more years. I mean, you mentioned Cam Smith, 6 years. You still got Paredes. I don't know if Paredes has hit. Maybe this might be his first year of arbitration. He still have a couple years left with him too.
Oh yeah,
Paredes.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And then the big one with Kyle Tucker for me, it's really all about whether or not the Cubs, if they don't do well in the playoffs, and then they also don't retain him.
Is big.
I have a lot of receipts from Cub fans who have come after.
Oh really?
Rock solid confidence that they're going to win the World Series and they're going to retain Kyle Tucker. They think their team's somehow going to pony up $10 million. It's going to be a stupid contract.
Yeah.
If Kyle Tucker still, if he ends up being, you know, just if he ends up with an average Kyle Tucker season, he's going to be really, really, really wealthy.
He is. Yeah. Every article I see about free agency this offseason and Kyle Tucker, his name gets brought up alongside Juan Soto. And not saying he's going to get 15 years, $750 million. But talking about how like that set the, you know, like that ceiling, you know, Kyle Tucker, he's not going to get 15 years, probably going to get 10. He's not going to get 750, but he's probably going to get something with a five in front of it. You know, like 12 years, $500 million, something like that. You know, Vladimir Guerrero got a $500 million deal. And I think Kyle Tucker is a better player than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So, yeah, that's going to be a high ticket contract, man, for sure.
Another thing I'm monitoring closely now that I just stumbled across it, Sean. Right now, eighth in the AL in OPS is Cody Bellinger. Ninth is George Springer.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Springer's still crushing it, huh?
Yeah. He's cooled out. Springer was really hot for a while.
But he's still ninth. Ninth overall or just ninth among outfielders?
Ninth amongst outfielders in the AL.
Yeah. That's still pretty good. Last I checked, there's a lot of outfielders in the AL. That's still really, really good. Payne and Pendergast with you. Oh, speaking of Chicago, so you said you kept a bunch of receipts from from Cub fans out there that came after you?
I had pointed out once, I just had a graphic that I made a graphic with my editing skills. But just the showing that, hey, so far at whatever point in the season it was, Cam Smith's been playing better than Kyle Tucker in the outfield, which isn't a huge surprise to people who have been paying attention to Kyle Tucker the last couple of years. He was not a good defender. He's a lazy defender.
He's a lazy.
Like, and that wasn't, that's not me saying it in hindsight. We noticed it. It was just, he wasn't nearly as good as he had been the 3 years ago when he won a gold glove.
Yeah, he won a gold glove. Been lazy. Sorry, Tucker, you've been lazy. And Cam Smith's been good. Like, he's been, for a guy who's never played the position until this season, Cam, boy, he covers a ton of ground out there, man. He gets the balls out there. I was going to say, speaking of Chicago, we should, I'll find this audio. I think I've got it bookmarked. We should play it later. I should have, man, I should have pulled it for Acknowledge Me. Apparently, Ross Tucker pissed off Chicago fans on Friday on 670 The Score. Talking
Did
about
he say something? He didn't said something less than glowing about Caleb Williams.
He said a few things less than glowing about Caleb Williams. Yeah, so I'll find it during a break, and we'll play it later in the show. But he was, my son alerted me to it. My son James, who lives up in Chicago, he's like, "Pops, Ross Tucker got all my Bears friends all angry up here today." he said if he had to bet that Caleb Williams would not be the starting quarterback for the Bears 3 years from now.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and you know how they felt about Trubisky back in the day. Imagine how they felt about Caleb. They loved Trubisky back in the day. Yeah.
Some of the biggest hate I've gotten was from when I did like a really quick video during training camp last year after Caleb Williams' first preseason game. Mm-hmm. And he threw like four passes. And I was just kind of jokingly saying, like, that's it, rookie of the year. And they were. He did some impressive things in that game. But then I still get comments from people coming back to me on that, you know, from a lot of Commanders fans, especially.
Jaden Daniels.
Tell me how stupid and me and my fellow Bears fans are. Yes, yeah. But then also Bears fans themselves who felt betrayed because they thought I was a Bears fan. And after I took some shots at Caleb Williams, they felt like I betrayed them.
Oh, you were some Judas to Bears fans?
Yeah.
That got a lot of hits, though, your Caleb Williams video, huh? Like, just breaking
things down? Yeah, I think that was the most I got. The biggest hits I've ever had were my one Caleb Williams reaction video, and then I did an educational what is the hip drop tackle.
Yeah.
The hip drop tackle, man, that was that made me a lot of money just even off of the Google algorithm, the payments you get from AdSense.
Did it really?
Which isn't usually that much, yeah.
Okay. You got to keep doing videos like that, man.
I know, I'm so stupid. My one little 4-minute what is a hip drop tackle video, I've made like $2,000 off of that.
Yeah, what are you
and
doing?
Yet I've never done another one like it. I just like, my wheelhouse.
Okay, so Seth is the artiste that is not going to sacrifice his artistical integrity. No. I am here to do Texans videos and Texans videos only.
I've got like five videos that have all done the best, like any of my videos have ever done.
Yeah.
But they're not like what I enjoy doing. So I'm like,
man.
This is why the old school economists were wrong. They always thought that people made rational economic decisions.
Dude.
And remember you were learning that in high school?
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
Yeah.
And then they finally, the guy that realized, the one economist after a century of economists being a thing, they said, hey, wait a second. I don't think that people actually do always make rational economic decisions.
He won
a Nobel Prize for saying something that every damn high school kid was saying when they first took economics. That's not how it works at all. I watch the way my parents operate.
Dude.
They're no better than monkeys. What are you talking about?
If I saw something working like that, I would be hip drop videoing every week. You know, like, All right, let's do Acknowledge Me. We acknowledge big performances from the weekend around the world of sports from the previous week. Big performances. And we do it. I'll say a name. Ben Gary, our producer, will hit the Roman. Roman Reigns, hotkey right there. Let's start with Framber Valdez. We're going to acknowledge Framber because he has been, since his start to the season that was a little shaky, where Seth, he had, you know, 4 or 5 really good starts, 3 really bad starts, and he was sitting there with an ERA of around 4.5. He has really straightened things out of late, and he was excellent again on Saturday. He pitched in the 2-1 win over the Mariners. A little wild, little not super efficient. 4 walks, uncharacteristic. But came up big when it counted. One earned run in six innings, 100 pitches. Most importantly, big picture, he's got that ERA down into the low threes again. And yep. it feels like Hunter Brown's last start notwithstanding. I'm going to write that off to playing in a minor league Tampa Bay ballpark. Hunter Brown will be fine. You've got, in a muddled up AL, and especially a muddled up AL West, those two guys healthy and going out and giving you six, seven, sometimes eight every time, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. Framber acknowledged.
No, especially, to give a minor acknowledgement to Hunter Brown. Not that you want to after a bad performance, and yet it was. I'm very careful about blaming atmospheric conditions, Sean, because it feels too much like when Yankees fans were making excuses for Aaron Judge because the roof was either – was it because the roof was closed or open? They were saying, oh, it would have carried otherwise.
I think it was closed because they – well, did they open it? I can't remember. Did they open it during the playoffs?
Yeah, I can't remember
I don't remember. I just remember they were making excuses. You're right.
They were making a lot of excuses, you know, as they were going against a team that had – but a couple of really – the Astros have a couple of really good lefty pull hitters as well.
There you go,
That Hunter Brown, you just wipe it away. Framber's getting back to the point now where, all right, if Framber has a stinker of a performance, I think that's just a normal stinker of a performance.
Yep.
He's settled on in.
Yep. Josh Hader, 13 for 13 in save opportunities this year. Josh Hader has been everything that the Astros thought they were getting – two off seasons ago when they signed him. He was okay last year, but he wasn't, you know, it was rough at the beginning of the year. He straightened things out, still finished the year with an ERA of nearly four. This version of Hader is exactly what they thought they were getting when they gave him $95 million a couple years ago.
No, and I think in a lot of ways that just, he's been pitching with that dominance that you want to see.
Yeah.
Where even last year it still felt a little bit like an illusion at times. Felt more like good Ryan Pressly starts where, you know, just don't feel as awesome about it, where this time he's just doing it authoritatively.
He's been great, so we acknowledge Josh Hader as well. All right, this one, O'Neill Cruz, the Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder. Why are we acknowledging a Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder? Here's why.
Drive to right field. If it's fair, it's gone, and it is gone. There's a Cruz missile. Wow! That got out of here and no time. A bomb. 122.9 miles an hour.
I was going to say that had to be the hardest ball.
Wow.
There's no doubt that ball had to land 50 feet in the river.
Let's make it 123 for his 11th home run of the season.
A record in the StatCast era, 122.9. This one's for you, Seth. This one is for StatNerd.
I don't like
Seth.
The mile per hour ones.
Well, you're going to get it.
Until they go to the metric system, it's not nerdy enough for me. I need kilometers per hour. Clicks per hour, damn it.
122.9. I'm telling you, go out of your way to find the video of this home run. Sometimes these exit velos don't match what it looks like out there.
Yeah.
You know, like yesterday they said during the Astros broadcast that at some point during the game, like six innings, and I texted you, like the hardest hit ball, the only one that was over 100 miles an hour exit velo, like five, six innings into the game, was Mauricio Dubon's double play ground ball. Other than that, because you know how much I hate the soft contact. This looked like 150 miles an hour off the bat.
The miles per hour stuff doesn't do much for me. I'd rather just watch the baseball and listen to it and everything. Because sometimes it's a little bit of a letdown. But whatever. That one was really, really fast and hard. And it was as close to a line drive out there as you could get.
All right.
Just in terms of the way it feels, Sean.
Yeah.
With Hader, right now he has the lowest, like his whip right now would be the lowest in his entire major league career.
Yeah, he's been excellent.
He's not putting guys on base. He's going out there and he is closing games out.
Even the one that he was dancing with the devil last week, the guy got on because Victor Caratini interfered with the bat. It was catcher's interference. That was the only reason they got a guy on. They move him over to third and Hader shut it down then. He's been outstanding. All right, I'm going to skip Channing Crowder here, Ben, real quick. We got to get to this Pablo Torre. I got to acknowledge Pablo Torre. And I am not a big Pablo Torre guy. Pablo Torre, journalist, he's on a lot of these ESPN shows, the debate shows, and he's part of Dan Le Batard's team. And he has a podcast called Pablo Torre Finds Out. Well, boy, did he ever. We know that he had the podcast last week where he talked to a bunch of people, or 2 weeks ago, when he talked to a bunch of people from North Carolina. He was the one that reported that Jordan Hudson had been banned from the football facility. North Carolina denied it, all these things. He went and did a second episode of the podcast because he didn't really dig into the ring cam thing with Belichick very much in the first episode.
Yeah.
Talked about it a little bit on some of the follow-up interviews he did with people. And real quick, so, Bill Belichick, 2 years ago, wound up on a ring cam at a house in Massachusetts, shirtless, just stumbling
around. Looking like around.
He
was locked out. Yeah. Just kind of looking around like, what the hell do I
Deadhead,
do? I'm locked out of this house.
The whole thing, yeah. It went viral. Pablo Torre made it his mission to find out where this house was. Mm-hmm. He went on, pardon my take, the Barstool podcast, and made an appeal to this guy. I'd never heard of this guy. Have you heard of this Rainbolt, Seth? This GeoGuessr? Have you heard of this guy?
Oh, I know these GeoGuessers.
Okay.
It's incredible what they're able to do. Yeah, they watch video and figure out exactly where a place on Earth is.
It's incredible. I'd never heard of this before.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
Yeah, I'd never heard of Rainbolt. So Pablo Torre goes on, pardon my take, and makes an appeal and send an email actually to the agent for this Rainbolt, who's like he's like the Michael Jordan of GeoGuessers.
What I did before I logged on here is I emailed the manager of that guy, Rainbolt, who's the GeoGuessr guy.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And so I'm hoping if Rainbolt listens to this, please respond to your manager's email. I kind of need you to solve a mystery. Like, where was this camera?
Oh, my God, Pablo.
This is crazy.
Oh, my God, Pablo.
Are you guys familiar with Rainbolt?
Yes.
It's like the guy who, like, you can show him a picture of anything, and he's like, it's exactly here.
It's wild. He can be like, you are at the parking lot of old Caldors in Massachusetts on the... He can pinpoint you on a map. It's crazy.
Okay, he's the geo-guessing goat.
Yeah, so it's the reason there's two... Pablo played the Pardon My Take clip before leading into... That was Katie Nolan and his other co-host talking right there. Rainbolt gets back to him. Mm-hmm. Rainbolt was in Nepal at the time. 18,000 feet in Nepal, gets back to him and says, hey, got your email, saw your video. We've gotten asked about this Belichick video so many times. Uh-huh. But now we're going to work. He's got eight of his geo-guessing colleagues working on it while he's in Nepal.
Oh, he's got
this
a Rainbolt. Staff.
He's got Pablo Torre
so
called it.
It's kind of disappointing to me that he's got a staff.
He called it, they're like the Avengers of geoguessers.
Yeah.
So it turns out, I don't know if it was Rainbolt himself or one of these other geoguessers. They were able to find this place, like you said, a picture or a video, and these it's freaky. It's an Airbnb in Winthrop, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. It's not on the Cape or anything. It looks to be about maybe 10-15, it's on the water, about 10-15 minutes outside of Boston. And that's where they were staying. So this was not a house that she owned, that Jordan Hudson owned. There was a second ring video that they played on the podcast, and I'm gonna play this. Hopefully it translates. It's another shirtless video of Belichick on the same morning where it looks now he's leaving to go to work and he's got like a satchel over his shoulder, but he's still shirtless getting into his car. This is what it sounded like on the podcast, them giving the play-by-play of this thing.
Here exclusively for the first time is the other video.
Oh my God. Oh!
He has a satchel.
Yeah, it's got a little merce.
Or bag, right?
He is very shirtless.
Let's go into this.
He has like a leather satchel.
It is a
satchel.
Key, isn't it?
Okay, so he's still topless. Absolutely yum, yum, delish.
Great. A bag with a leather strap that he's clearly not figured out how to tighten because it's looped in a way you definitely wouldn't be choosing. And a hydro flask.
He's holding one of those steel...
Metal flasks you put water in, then he puts it down by the wheel well.
Yeah. But I would say he looks, and this is sort of normal for our guy, Bill, he looks kind of disheveled. Even if you saw another man at that exact same age in the exact same state... Bill has a little bit of disrepair to him.
It's a funny play-by-play. And he's carrying one of those water tumblers that has the handle to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pretty...
He's got a 24-year-old girlfriend. He's got to have those, whatever they're called, those coolers that all the girls...
Yeah, Amy's got one. I don't know what they're called. All right, so here are the things you need to know about this. Pablo Torre went and rented this Airbnb. He confirmed that it was the correct Airbnb because Jordan Hudson left a review in July of 2023 that said, great spot, great host, great views, great value. So that was, so now we know.
Great leaking to TMZ shortly thereafter.
Here's how the video leaked, okay?
Yeah.
While Pablo Torre is at the Airbnb, the owners of it are in the unit up above, okay? So this is the ground unit of a two-story deal. And they came downstairs, and he runs into them, and they recognized him, and they got talking about it. The way the video got out is the owners of the Airbnb, who were big Patriot fans, they weren't totally sure it was Belichick that was staying there. He may have had a hat on or something like that. But once they saw that ring video, they sent it to a couple of their friends, and they're like, hey, is this Belichick? Yeah. And then it was once it's out there, it's out there. And the way they put it on the podcast was like, their level of custody of this thing was out of control the second they sent it to friends of theirs. So it's...
They sent it to somebody who sent it to somebody else.
And it wound up with TMZ. So that's how it wound up.
But it wasn't Jordan Hudson. It wasn't. Pablo Torre, I felt, was a little bit reckless for a guy who's trying to show that he's being serious journalist on this very frivolous topic. I feel like he was a little too loose speculating that it was Jordan Hudson that released the video.
He was, but I give him credit for going and doing the investigation to find out that it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, like he literally went and rented. He did a first-person video walking out of the door like Belichick did.
Everything I've seen about the way Belichick operates when he's in Nantucket for the summer is that he is just like any other like semi-retired dude just living the laid-back island life. So he's probably walking around with his shirt off in a lot of when he's out there in the summer.
That's a good point. Pablo also found Jordan Hudson on one of those massive game day fan cam videos. You know, they do those 360-degree videos of the entire stadium, and you put your seat in, and it zooms right in on you. He found her at a game in Bill Belichick's seats in November of 2021.
Oh,
Belichick was still in his relationship with that
His ex-girlfriend.
The ex-girlfriend. Yeah, I forget her. I don't know why I can't remember her name.
Is it Linda Holiday?
Linda. Yes, I think it's Linda Holiday. It's Linda H. I think it's Linda Holiday. So Belichick was at least.
I pulled that out of my ass.
Belichick,
if that's correct.
I know, dude. That's, yes. But he was, Pablo found her at a game sitting in Belichick's seats. Confirmed it was her by comparing it to a picture on Jordan Hudson's Facebook page from that same date.
That same day, so same outfit and everything. Yeah.
Next to the same two people. Yeah.
This is getting to the point, for one, I feel like this is we've reached peak 2025 with the fact that he actually found the Airbnb and he went and did the...
With a geoguesser.
This is like Gonzo. This is like cyber Gonzo journalism.
Yeah.
But also that I do... There's a part of me that it's blowing up to the point where it's almost soap opera proportions, to where I start worrying that people are going to be assassinated or just I could see various power hungry people in a situation like this digging around on the internet to find out how they off somebody. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad
there is no limit to how crazy this could get.
I'm glad you said that, because there's one thing we didn't get to and acknowledge me, and along those lines, we can get to it in the next segment. Could this be a person, based on going public with some intel, that Belichick would have whacked over this? All right. We'll have that. We didn't get
to it. How many people has Belichick had whacked in his life, do you think?
Yeah. The over-under is definitely like 3.5, I would say. Yeah, for sure. Are you kidding me with all the gates that he's involved with? He's definitely had somebody that operated a camera for Spygate whacked, for sure.
Yeah, that's a classic. If you think of how many times he's been investigated, usually it's like kind of like, okay, how many times you've been pulled over for speeding compared to how many times you've sped?
Thank you. Yeah.
You got to wonder, man, if this many have seen the light of day, how many have been squashed with an assassin's bullet or Garrett?
Yeah. Sith.
You want I should shoot him, boss? No. Use the Garrett.
Make it slower. Yeah,
just
slower.
Be sure and then just put the weapon over at Aaron Hernandez's house.
Slow and more painful. So we'll do that. Off-season superlatives for the AFC as well. What are the Texans most likely of superlative-wise? We'll get to that as well on a Memorial Day show coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Memorial Day edition of the program. Good to be with you. All right, just to put a bow on the conversation from the previous segment, we just did acknowledge me. We gave a very lengthy acknowledgement to Pablo Torre for digging into the soap opera that is Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick and the ring cam video and unearthing the, solving the mystery of where that video came from and how it got out on the internet and whatnot. If you want to listen, you can do the rewind feature, listen to the podcast. But Seth brought up the very valid question of, do you think at some point with any of these information leaks or when Belichick has lived these various secret lives or had these gates going on in his professional life, that he's had somebody offed, that Belichick has put out a hit on somebody to keep them quiet forever?
They did get a safe house for Aaron Hernandez back in the day.
Did they arrange
Harvard,
this
guy's a big enough deal that we got to be sure we rent him a safe house. Now, that was supposedly to keep him away from
his buddies,
his girlfriend or his fiance.
Yeah.
No, that was, it was, I don't think if anything, it became a cauldron of more illicit activity.
Didn't work. It obviously didn't work.
Would he have, I don't know, man. It used to be a time when you could, it was considered admirable to off some of your, one of your rivals.
Sure. The 1700s.
If I were a hunter or something like that. Yeah. Somewhere, by the way, but we know that Belichick is a student of history.
Right.
I could see Belichick thinking, like, totally justifying it in his brain. It was like, well, this used to be really common in the 1600s.
So we didn't get to this, but Channing Crowder, of course, is part of the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor. He also, it looks like, has a second podcast called Hockman and Crowder that he's has a co-host with, and he chats about things on there. And Channing Crowder, I think it's safe to say, among the three Pivot podcast guys, he's kind of the loose cannon, right? Like, he's kind of the live wire. The other two are pretty, steady. And, Fred Taylor, steady Fred, and Ryan Clark, somewhat joyless, I think. And then there's Channing Crowder, who is the humor of the whole thing. So he does this podcast. Bill Belichick went on the Pivot podcast with those three during that phase recently, post-CBS Sunday Morning interview, where Jordan Hudson was repeatedly interfering in the interview.
Yeah.
So then Belichick goes on this other mini car wash here with Michael Strahan and at ACC Media Days and on the Pivot podcast, where it's very clear he's trying to distance Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend, from all of his stuff. Like, that appears to very much be a goal of all the questioning and everything else, mm-hmm. is to erase that image from that CBS Sunday Morning interview and create a new image. Channing Crowder on his podcast just blew the lid off of everything and said, yeah, this is what Jordan was like when we did the Pivot podcast with Belichick.
It's weird to know him as Coach Belichick, running the entire organization as GM, head coach, talent coordinator, all that stuff, and then to see this tiny little 95-pound girl kind of pretty much telling him what to do.
So she was there?
She was there. She choreographed the open.
Wow.
she was there, and she kind of coordinated. They had brand managers and, all kinds of stuff.
What do you mean she coordinated? Like, you guys are a successful podcast. You have a pretty decent formula. Like, she coordinated the
open? Well, I mean, CBS Sunday Morning's pretty successful show as well, and she seemed to have her paws all over that thing.
That's what I say. She has her paws on the situation.
Okay.
Boy, she's got him on lockdown,
now,
man.
I have to reiterate, Seth. He is describing the off-camera part of an interview where one of the clear goals of this set of interviews Belichick is doing is to distance Jordan Hudson from his whole thing. Like, no, she just handles my business.
Yeah.
She handles non-football stuff and all this. And Channing Crowder is just chirping on his podcast about her orchestrating and choreographing.
I don't even worry about him having the wrong girlfriend. I worry about his inability to know what a good PR person is.
Yeah.
Because she sounds like the absolute worst. Because we've seen him just in very, we don't deal with it as much, but we see it with the music people, like the music stations on our company and everything.
Yeah.
Like, there's some bad PR people that just make their clients even worse off because they're such a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And she seems like she's like one of those people, but less qualified.
Yeah.
But she's got her tendrils into every little aspect of his life.
So is Channing Crowder going to get whacked over what he just said on his podcast, right?
I don't think he would get whacked. I think they would be very selective in it. I think Jordan Hudson's probably She would go after Pablo Torre.
She is going after Pablo Torre.
Yeah, I know she is on social media and then quickly deleting it.
Yeah.
I think, at some point it's gonna cross her mind.
Yeah.
Look, she's only human. At some point it's natural to think like, oh, what if this person were just out of the picture?
I'm listening to Channing Crowder. I'm like, this is exactly what he didn't want out there.
Yeah.
This is the purpose of doing the interview with you guys.
She acted exactly the way she did on that CBS interview.
Right. Like, except that her orchestration was, this is the part where you tell them that I'm not involved in this anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, listen, guys, just so we're clear.
Right.
You're on strict alert. This is going to be all about how I'm not telling you about what it's all going to be about right now.
Dude, okay? It's crazy, man. Between this and Aaron Rodgers, man, we got that coming up later in the show. Danica Patrick going off on Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're the soap opera show on the station.
It's not our fault.
No.
These are the people acting up and acting out. We have to document it.
Thank you, Seth. We have to
gossip
talk
about it.
Okay, this is funny. Morning, fellas. Okay, I have to back up. Remember when Todd Kalas, it seemed like, accidentally revealed that Hayden Wisniewski was out for the year when it hadn't been reported he's out for the year
yet
on the TV broadcast? Someone, Rich Rose on the text page is asking, morning, fellas, do you think Todd Kalas was not on the call this weekend because he got suspended for a few days for leaking the Wisniewski Tommy John surgery, LOL?
I think it's likely and possible and probable. Yes, 100%. Okay. That's my responsible take on it.
There you go.
No, I think it's a long season. It's Memorial Day weekend. And
these guys get planned vacations. Which I'm not used to. I'm not used to my play-by-play. I'm not used to my broadcast teams getting... I'm not begrudging them. If you can get vacation. I just know, like, growing up, watching my team growing up, I can't ever remember the play-by-play and color guys ever missing a game during the season.
But you'd work 162 games a year, drowning in a vat of whiskey and cigar smoke until you die at the microphone.
That's right.
That is your lot in life.
That's what it was in 1979, man. Yeah, I don't know. But if you can get it, get it. But no, he's not suspended. It was a planned break, I'm sure. I wonder if anybody said anything to him, though, about that. You know, because that was like, I just remember him saying that.
The
Wisniewski
thing that he said. Yeah, he said Wisniewski's probably not going to be back this year. That was as the team was doing their typical kind of like, just discomfort.
It had not, the Tommy John surgery had not been reported yet. It wasn't reported until like another week after that. So, it was, I would venture to say, not a suspension. All right, superlatives. It's that time of year, you know, it's graduation time of year, yearbooks coming out and whatnot. Superlatives for the AFC when it comes to the offseason. This is from Bill Barnwell. What superlative did the Texans get from NFL writer Bill Barnwell? We will discuss that coming up next.